Hello, welcome back to another episode of In the Money. I'm Constantine Vrondopoulo with Fidelity's Trading Strategy Desk. And with me, as always, on the weekly basis, Mr. Tony Zhang, Chief Strategist over there at Options Play. Tony, I haven't hosted the show in a couple of months. I guess you are welcoming me back. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much, KV. It feels like it's been months since we've been on. A lot has happened since then. So looking forward to diving into what has happened even in just the last week.
No question about it, Tony. You know, I watch markets very closely, tick by tick, almost every single day. And the last couple of weeks have been what I would call very dispersive, very divergent, you know, across the board in financial markets, in equities especially so. What stands out to you the most? How do we make sense of what's been going on? How do you read the tape and what it's actually saying above and beyond the headlines that we're facing every day?
Yeah, and I think that's really probably the most important thing to dive into, because if you just read the headlines and you just look at the S&P 500, it looks like the markets are on an absolute tear. And in many ways, it really is. You know, since the March lows, the S&P is up nearly 20% since those March lows. But the reality of that is that the rally is incredibly narrow and increasingly more fragile as the S&P and the NASDAQ 100 continue to grind higher on AI leadership, which is really the only industry that is dragging the rest of the markets higher here. But the underlying market here still remains relatively calm and, if anything, somewhat weak. If you look at the equal weight S&P 500 index, you know, we're still below that 205 double top that's been put in place for the last couple of months now, hasn't been able to make a new high, while the market cap indices was really the only thing that's dragging the markets higher here. You know, I think it was yesterday we saw more S&P 500 stocks making new 52-week lows than making new 52-week highs. That just shows you the dispersion that we're continuing to see here in the broader markets. Now, if we take a step back here, I think the bigger story that we really need to be paying attention to here right now is really the one of inflation, which this week we got two readings on inflation that both came in significantly hotter than expected. And core inflation, which strips out energy, because we all know that oil prices is one of the primary drivers of inflation at the moment. Even when you strip out energy, core inflation is still continuing to reaccelerate. And this is something that is starting to be a little bit more of a concern, especially as you see 10-year yields are continuing to push that 4.5% level here. TLT just broke below that major support at 85 yesterday. We're targeting 81 to the downside. So the bond market is certainly responding to the inflation concerns that the equity markets at the moment seemingly is shrugging aside. And arguably, the AI trade is really the trade that's moving, while the rest of the market is being a little bit more conservative, a little bit more concerned about what the health of the consumer is going to look like for the rest of the year, with oil prices being at $5 at the pump and what that's going to mean with regards to consumer spending. Now, across the board, if you look at the sectors here, the tech sector is the only one moving here. You have Micron, Nvidia, AMD continuing to outperform by leaps and bounds, while the rest of the market essentially trades sideways here. And that narrowness started to get tested earlier this week. If you saw that Tuesday inflation print, we opened up intraday. Markets down 1-2%. Semis were down 6% at the open on Tuesday. That really just shows you how fragile the markets are if we all head for the markets at the same time, especially within a very crowded trade like the semiconductor space. And that's my broader concern here with the markets here right now, because narrow markets on relatively thin volume that we've seen over the last 6 weeks or so in itself is not necessarily a bearish signal. It can, you know, these are times that typically or more likely will lead to some level of a consolidation or pullback. And many times when things are this narrow, this crowded, those pullbacks tend to be also quick and violent. But we have to remember that there is another way for this to get resolved, which is for the rest of the market to play catch up. And a couple of weeks ago, we saw Equal weight, we saw the small cap started to break out here, and there were some signs that perhaps the rest of the market was starting to play catch up here. But over the last couple of weeks, that's proven to be essentially a false start on that particular front. So, which is why I'm going into this particular week after what is now the sixth consecutive week of the S&P 500 seeing back-to-back gains, starting to see that this is getting a little bit stretched to the upside. And my concerns in terms of a pullback or some type of a consolidation is substantially higher here. Now, we do have some key catalysts up ahead. You have the U.S.-China summit that's currently going on right now that's seemingly on early announcements are going fairly well. It seems like the two countries are trying to normalize relations and work on better relations as opposed to being adversaries. So from that perspective, I think markets are going to receive that relatively positively. But the question really comes down to the fact, can AI growth continue to carry the rest of the market while every other segment or part of the market remains concerned around inflation and just the fact that 10-year yields are at 4.5% here? And, you know, we're talking potentially of maybe even rate hikes rather than rate cuts, because right now the market is pricing an essentially 0% chance of a rate cut in 2026, while the potential of a rate hike between now and 2028 is now as high as around 22% at the moment.
Yeah, Tony, it sounds like you're laying out a pretty strong case for the potential of the upcoming S&P 500 downside volatility. I guess we're being forewarned maybe to a certain degree by the weakness in market internals. And specifically, you mentioned several historic cross asset correlations that are just not jiving right now. And that's something to be paying attention to. So the question is, I think, for myself and for the audience members out there, is how do you translate this divergence in breadth and historic cross-asset correlation just not doing what it has been doing in the past into a hedging decision rather than just being a warning signal of sorts?
Yeah, you know, right now with the markets at these all-time highs, with the S&P and the NASDAQ so stretched to the upside, you know, we are by all means from a statistical and a technical perspective what we would consider overbought by pretty much all measures. And we're overbought specifically where the leadership is incredibly concentrated in a small percentage of stocks within the S&P 500. That is really where you have the potential of a quick and violent pullback here to the downside, especially since the rally here over the last 5 or 6 weeks, if you look at the S&P 500, it's been relatively light. And then you have the backdrop of inflation that continues to surprise to the upside, with, you know, core inflation, even when you strip out higher energy prices, continue to reinforce this potential stagflation risk that we see here. And the market continues to behave as if the macro backdrop is stabilizing. But the reality is that yields are rising, rate cuts, you know, potential rate cuts are disappearing, and the breadth is incredibly narrow. And oil at the moment still remains, you know, well above $100. So my view is that I'm not calling for a crash by any means. I just believe that the statistical chance of some form of a pullback and consolidation is increasingly higher and asymmetrical to the downside over the next few weeks. And right now, with the VIX below 18%, we do have the opportunity to potentially buy some downside protection for what is a relatively small percentage of the stocks or the ETS value. And being able to buy a little bit of protection here over the next 30 days or so, I think, is prudent given the structure that we currently find ourselves in with the markets. So I'm looking out to the June expiration. I'm looking at buying a 745 by 710 put spread on SPY. My downside targets here on SPY is around 710, because this rally that we've seen here over the last few weeks have been, like I said, incredibly narrow, incredibly thin, and there's not a lot of support here on the S&P 500 until that 710 level here to the downside, which is why I'm targeting that 710 as the lower strike price on my put spread. earlier today, you can pay about $7.88 for that 1 month put spread, which gives you that downside protection into that 710 support level for just roughly 1% of the stock of the ETF's value. So you're risking $788 per contract, which is roughly one share of SPY, which, you know, with a put contract like this, gives you control of 100 shares. This gives you a risk-defined hedge against a pullback towards that 710 area on the S&P, which is where I see as some major support.
Tony, very well thought out reason and structure. Obviously, you've given us plenty of macro thoughts and market internal thoughts on why the S&P 500 could potentially pull back. Obviously, you don't hedge because you think something is going to crash. You hedge because you want to continue to participate in the upside if it does come, but protect yourself in case the market pulls back. So you're anticipating and projecting some things. This is a partial hedge all the way down to 710. So, you know, one of the reasons, as you mentioned, volatility, the VIX index is just shy of 18% annualized. Naturally, you would expect for volatility to expand if the market does draw down, if the sellers do force a break at some point. So insurance will become more expensive. Question about your own common approach. So when you put on a trade like this for hedging purposes, specifically a bear put spread, you just fire and forget it as a sunk cost, or, you know, and let the good times roll for as long as they do? Or do you manage it somehow in practice, Tony, for both losses and if the market does pull back into that range at some point, for profitability as well?
This is a really fantastic question, because in this particular case, because I'm using this as a hedge and the particular structure is actually quite favorable, my views on how to manage this is a little bit different than how I'd normally manage a debit spread, where I'm taking a directional view on an underlying security like a stock, or I'm taking a bullish view on. Because first of all, you know, the risk to reward ratio on a hedge like this is incredibly favorable. I'm risking around $788 per contract to potentially make upwards of $2,700 if SPY is below 710 by that June 18th expiration. And keep in mind that I'm only risking 1% of the SPY's value to essentially define a hedge over the next roughly 30 days or so. So typically with a debit structure like this, I would, if I lose 50% of the premium that I pay, I usually will consider getting out of this trade at a loss and move on to the next trade. But in this particular case, because my hedging costs are so small relative to the total value of the ETF, the risk reward is so skewed in my favor. Even if, let's say, halfway through this trade I'm down 50% and the market hasn't corrected here, I would still prefer to hold on to this hedge through the end of the contract. Maybe in the last couple of days I might consider getting out of it if there's still some value left in that put spread here. But my goal is to essentially hedge against what is a very fragile situation where things can break, you know, at any time. You don't know what could be the catalyst that breaks it, which is why my preference is to hold this and know, and because I've defined my risk, I'm comfortable risking 1% of the ETF's value, and I'm going to hold it generally through expiration. Now, if we find ourselves below 710 before that June 18th expiration, we'll have to reassess as to whether or not we want to simply take profits and take on and simply look at buying the dip, if you will. Or we want to, if let's say the catalyst that drove the markets down to that 710 level is more concerning, and that there's more downside, where I would potentially roll this trade into another put spread to further get downside protection here. We'll have to see, depending on what drives the markets lower, if we get there by that June 18th expiration.
Thank you for that, Tony. Very unique circumstance here. So I'm sure our audience, participants and listeners appreciate that very much. Let's take a look at another trade idea that you brought to the table here.
Yeah, the next one to take a look at here is probably a company that's not on everyone's radar here. It's Sea Limited. They are essentially the Amazon of Southeast Asia. And the stock, if you look at a chart here, has not been doing particularly well here over the last, call it 9 months or so, but has recently over the last 2.5 months started to form a bottom here and started to break out here to the upside. And I think this is worth starting to pay attention to because if you look at the company, they continue to grow. There are three core businesses relatively strong. You have Shopee, which is essentially, like I said, the Amazon of Southeast Asia. They operate predominantly around the Philippines, Thailand, Vietnam, those types of countries, but they have growing businesses in Taiwan and Brazil. And then you have Sea Money, which is their fintech loan growth side of the business. So they're now getting into both the e-commerce as well as the money lending business. And both of those are growing substantially at the moment. And, you know, this is a really interesting opportunity because over the last couple of quarters, the stock has really started to grow in terms of margin expansion. And that's really what makes it interesting because from, you know, if you think about going back Amazon for many, many years, for almost two decades, Amazon didn't really turn a profit and, you know, they kept scaling the business. And that's exactly what Shopee's been doing, but they're starting to focus more on profitability here in the last few quarters. And that's really what I think investors are starting to pay attention to here right now, why the stock has stabilized and now starting to show a little bit of strength here to the upside. It is a relatively from a valuation perspective, trading at a premium relative to its peers. But if you consider the fact that they're looking to grow EPS, you know, about 20% year over year, revenue growth is in the 16 to 20% range, and they just generated $5.3 billion in free cash flow over the last 12 months, which allows them to cross $1 billion in EBITDA just in the last quarter. This is really what, you know, is turning this from a high growth story to a company that's starting to earn some real cash for their investors and likely going to start returning that in the form of either a dividend or share buybacks. And I think that's what's interesting about the recent reversal. If you look at the chart here, the breakout here above that $90 resistance level is what's interesting to me. The breakout here has been coupled with strong volume, and I believe that we could potentially easily power this up into that 110 level, which is the upside target, initial upside target that I have for this stock. And if we can get to that 110 level, the next upside target that I have here is closer to around 200. So the upside potential here is relatively sizable. They just reported strong earnings here, and I think that is what could be the catalyst that actually turns this around here over the next couple of months. And if we can get above that 110 level, that's really where I think the upside gets a lot more interesting. So the trade structure that I want to use here is I want to go out to the June 26th weekly expiration. I'm looking at selling the 87 puts and buying the 80 puts against that. So selling a put vertical here earlier today, you can collect about $3.20 for that credit spread. And what's really interesting right now, because of the dynamics of the options market with this particular trade right now, you can collect $3.20 for essentially what is a $7 wide credit spread. So maximum risk on this is only $380 while potentially making $320. It's very rare to see a credit spread give you risk to reward ratios that are that strong. Usually you're risking close to around $2 for every $1 you can potentially make. But right now the option market is giving a very favorable credit spread on something like this, which is why I'm favoring selling options right now, especially after the earnings announcement has come out. The catalyst for this to move substantially higher in the short run is lower. So my preference is to be an option seller. See if we can stabilize above that $90 level. If we start moving higher here, then I might be potentially a buyer of some call options or call spreads, shooting for that $200 upside over the next maybe year or so.
Yeah, certainly seems like something we would want to revisit if it stabilizes above that 90-95 area to the upside eventually. For now, sitting somewhere around the $87-$88 range. Just a heads up for everyone in the audience, I was reviewing this one earlier today, the liquidity and the bid-ask spread and the options on this underlying being non-US domiciled is a bit wide. So understand that this is a limited risk reward trade. So using the limit order to get into the position and really truly defining what you're willing to receive as a credit is going to be important in order to avoid getting clip on the entry here. So Tony, we have a look back at a trade that went spectacularly well. It sounds like you have some management techniques to deploy.
Yeah, about a month ago, I think it was in the middle of April, I laid out a bullish thesis on ARM. The stock was trading around $158 at the time. We sold the May 150 puts. Those are expiring tomorrow. We originally sold those for around $7.70 at the time. They're essentially near worthless because the stock is trading around $220 now. And I think my views, in terms of this particular stock remains firmly in place with regards to my bullish thesis. They are essentially a pick and shovel with regards to anything related to AI compute, any chip that is going to be built between now and the near future that is focused on AI compute is built on ARM infrastructure, and they get a royalty on every single chip that's made, which makes them a near monopoly in this particular space. So I'm rolling this particular trade. I think it's time to buy back the puts for essentially worthless, or you can let those expire and look at selling new puts on Monday next week. But I'm looking at buying back these puts at around 10 cents near worthless and looking at rolling it out to the June expiration and selling the $200 puts. Earlier today, you can collect about $10 for those $200 puts. And this gives you the obligation to buy the stock at $200 if by June expiration, the stock is below $200. But if you roll the credits from the current puts versus what you've already made on that first trade, your net acquisition cost on the stock, if it's below $200, would be around $182 which is a pretty substantial discount from where the stock is trading today. And this is really an opportunity where you can continue to collect the premium on high volatility stocks in the semiconductor space right now to your advantage, and potentially buy these stocks at a discount if we do see a pullback here between now and that June expiration.
Yeah, Tony, we're really going around the world today. Started here in the United States with spiders, went over to Asia with SE, and finishing out on ARM over in the UK and Europe. Something that I noticed on ARM, and I'm just curious about your thoughts. Obviously, this was a big winner, and you're continuing to maintain your bullish bias here. The implied volatility came in some post-earnings. It was in the mid-90s, implied vol for 30 days out, came in into the mid-70s, and that is still significantly higher than previous post-earnings cycle lows in vol terms. I've been looking at a chart going a few years back, and it normally bottoms out in the 45 to 50% range. So being at 70% implied vol post-earnings is quite a unique circumstance. I guess that's the reason why you're deciding to still maintain your sell premium stance.
Yeah, that's correct. That's part of why I'm maintaining a sell premium stance, but it's also why I'm selling premium that's a little bit further away from the current stock price, giving me a little bit more wiggle room, right? This was $158 stock when we first initiated the position back in mid-April. If this gets put to me here at the end of June, my acquisition cost on the stock, like I said, is around 182, 183, which is, substantially lower than where the stock is trading today, because I'm accounting for the fact that when stocks up, vols up, that does create a scenario where there is a higher probability of some level of consolidation and pullback here in the near future. And I want to account for that in the strike price selection of the structure, even though my preference at the moment, given the elevated vol, is to be short vol.
Options give us plenty of opportunities. Tony, thank you so much for bringing us new and thoughtful trade ideas today. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much, KV. It's great to be here.
Thank you to all of our viewers for tuning in and watching. A reminder that the Trading Strategy Desk does have a follow-up question and answer session specifically dedicated to the show. It's every Friday at 1:30 Eastern Standard Time. You could find it by going to fidelity.com/InTheMoneyFollow-Up. You can find everything else that the Trading Strategy Desk does by going very simply to fidelity.com/coaching. And if you're looking for further insights from Fidelity Investments, don't forget to sign up for the Active Investor newsletter from Fidelity Investments by going to fidelity.com/activeinvestorweekly. We will see you again next week. Take care, everybody. Until then, good luck.
Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or, if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options such as spreads, straddles, and collars as compared with a single option trade. Foreign investments involve greater risks than U.S. investments, including political and economic risks and the risk of currency fluctuations, all of which may be magnified in emerging markets. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you are most comfortable with. As with all your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Indexes are unmanaged. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play and are not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use.
Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.
Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Copyright 2026, FMR, LLC, all rights reserved.